Welcome back in. Don't forget, you can go to The Fan 965. You can click on our wonderful faces and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Right now, we currently have 1,223 people viewing this show. Love to see that.
Wow.
Love the support. Love to see it. Thank you for joining us here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Boys, it seems like the NFL is going back in time, not to quote Huey Lewis in the snooze. Sorry if people like Huey Lewis in the news.
You're not a big Huey Lewis guy?
Absolutely not.
All right. He opened for Jimmy Buffett a few years ago when we were at the concert at Wrigley, Dusty. Mm-hmm. And like 55-year-old dudes, man, they were rocking out. But I was just thinking about that. I'm like, Huey Lewis used to be the main act. You know, he's responsible for Home of the Chiefs, right?
Mm.
So he is the one responsible for Home of the Chiefs. Him and Joe Montana were like close friends, and he came and sang the national anthem when Joe Montana was playing here, and at the end went Home of the Chiefs, and here we sit, you know, 40 years later, 30 years later, whatever it's been. So Huey Lewis is the guy for that.
Is the running back position becoming more of a valuable position in the NFL?
I don't know. I think it's an overvalued position. I don't know if it's a valuable position in the NFL right now. I look at guys like Christian McCaffrey, who's supposed to be an all-world player. He's hurt. I look at Isaiah Pacheco. He's hurt. You know, these running backs to me are kind of a dime a dozen anymore. There's going to be a few exceptions to every rule, but I don't think the running back position will ever be what it was back in the 80s and early 90s before we discovered these aerial attacks.
Do you think the running back position is more of a veteran leadership role than it is like going and getting somebody like a Jahmyr Gibbs, a Bijan Robinson, something like that?
What do you mean by that, though, like a veteran leadership role?
Like, you look at the players that are, you know, kind of doing well as a running back this year, and it's Alvin Kamara, Derrick Henry, Aaron Jones, Saquon Barkley, Joe Mixon.
Mm-hmm.
Those are guys that are having impacts on the team at the running back position that this was part of that group led with by Austin Eckler that were like, the position is being disrespected. They're not paying us for a role. And he had a good game last night. He got a concussion, though, later in the game.
Yeah, he did. He left it.
I forgot about that.
There's another running back down, you know.
So, but you look at this and, you know, you think about where this position is because you listen to Mel Kiper talk about his nonsense about how football's not fun anymore because they're taking away the deep threats.
I think football's been great this year. Like, these three weeks have been a wonderful start to the season.
One of the most dramatic starts to any NFL season that I can remember.
I mean, it's awesome. Like, if you're not entertained by what's going on now, then you maybe need another hobby because this league has been wild in 3 weeks.
And think about all these people that are probably out of their survivor pools.
I know,
right?
People
that are taking Cincinnati, you know, taking the Ravens, all this sort of thing. Like, 3 weeks in the season, and I bet survivor pools are about as low as they've ever been to start week four of an NFL season.
Oh, I would imagine, yeah.
But I bring this up because, you know, we are seeing the play of the running back position. Now, again, if you play Dallas, you just run the ball every play. You play Cincinnati, you just run the ball every single play. But I have noticed, and this is, again, part of the nerd of me in fantasy, where I'm watching these numbers from players in fantasy, and it's not the guys that we thought would be the big guys. Now, a lot of people were high on Saquon Barkley, obviously, as an offensive line now. Philadelphia likes to run the ball. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey is hurt, and he's going to Germany. We'll get into that a little bit later. But guys like Alvin Kamara, guys like Joe Mixon, who's also hurt but was like a very vital piece of that backfield, that's what we're seeing now. We're not really, I mean, maybe just this year and the sample size is way too small, but it's weird that that position is actually showing some light. Whereas when the game changes, you've got to find maybe like, you know, a crook in the system. You got to find something that the game doesn't want to stop because they've forgotten about it or they don't have an answer for it. And I think a lot of teams are starting to forget about the run, and you're seeing the teams that start to run the ball a little bit more efficiently are starting to open things up, right? I know Lamar Jackson is an anomaly of a quarterback because he runs a lot. He ran for 122 yards against the Chiefs because he was the only one that could really do anything outside of Isaiah Likely. But that seems to be like something that they're going back on and looking at. I mean, you look at Carson Steele had 70 rushing yards against Atlanta. That's what set up Rashee Rice in that Chiefs offense to move the ball down the field. It is what it is. Like, that's what we're doing. Now, again, Carson Steele goes against the argument of paying a veteran.
Well, and there's my point, and you just kind of made it for me. Like, the last two running backs that we've relied on in Kansas City are a seventh-round draft pick and an undrafted guy who owns an alligator, and Pete is mad at him. Like those are the two guys that are having success in this offense. I think if you're an Andy Reid-led offense, you're never going to need to spend money or waste time with a running back. You'll just find a guy, and Carson Carson Steele is the next one to prove that point. It started with Sherkandrick West. It started with Spencer Ware. It went on to Damian Williams and went on to Darrell Williams. It went on to Isaiah Pacheco, and it's here, and it's been washed up Le'Veon Bell and washed up LeSean McCoy. Like, really, since Andy Reid got here, other than the tail end of Jamal Charles' career, addition that they've invested in, and they've been the best team in the National Football League since Andy Reid has taken over here in Kansas City. And so I don't think this team will ever spend money on a running back, nor should they spend money on a running back. I mean, some of the greats that we've had in Kansas City, like, how many of us want more of Priest Holmes? Take Larry Johnson's whatever he's doing these days out of the equation. He was a hell of a running back. We only got him for a handful of years. Jamal Charles, man, like, how many years do we wish we would have had Jamal Charles for? Like, these guys have just such a short shelf life in the NFL. I'm still not wasting a dime on a running back, especially if I'm an Andy Reid-led offense. Now, maybe if I don't have a quarterback or Mr. Irrelevant as my quarterback, maybe I do look for some other ways to kind of attack this thing in the NFL when it comes to an offensive standpoint. But from where we sit right now, I think a running back would be the biggest waste of money that the Kansas City Chiefs could spend, because you're getting an undrafted guy and a seventh round draft pick to be just as good as anybody else right now in this league.
Your leading rushers in the NFL right now, Saquon Barkley, number one, and then Jordan Mason, obviously, that would probably be Christian McCaffrey. And then it's J.K. Dobbins, Alvin Kamara, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, Jonathan Taylor, all guys in second-year contracts, third-year contracts that are older veteran guys, and that's what teams are using. And Green Bay is successful, Baltimore is successful, New Orleans has been successful, and J.K. Dobbins had a revamped career in Los Angeles, as he'll play the Chiefs this week, who do pretty well against the run. But then you go below that, and that's where you start seeing the names of guys that you thought would be at the top of the list because where they were either drafted or the way the running back position has been evolved in the league, with Jahmyr Gibbs 13th in the league in rushing, Brian Robinson Jr. 14th in the league in rushing, Bijan Robinson 16th in the league in rushing.
And a lot of that has to do with the fact that he was held to 32 yards or whatever it was the other night. Yeah,
Breece Hall supposed to set the world, on fire. 22nd in rushing, Travis Etienne in Jacksonville 23rd in rushing, Kyren Williams 23rd in rushing. The young guys seem to be where you don't pay the running backs. You wait till they're more of a veteran sort of leadership because of what it's shown this year in the league, where everyone thinks offense runs the world, which it does. Mm-hmm. But what we're seeing is that some teams are evolving to what defenses are doing, right? Cornerbacks are starting to get paid because wide receiver talent went up in the last 10 years. Quarterback talent got paid more and more and more every single year.
I wonder if there's going to be a pause to that now based on Watson and Lawrence and all of these guys that we've paid at the quarterback position for no apparent reason. I wonder if there's going to be a pause to that. There always is. There's always a correction in the NFL. And I think with that running back position, the guy that Andy Reid invested the most in as a running back is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That was a first round draft pick. And you could say arguably, he's probably the worst of all those running backs we just named. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, from a contribution standpoint, has brought nothing to the table. And he was a first-round draft pick. Now, I still like Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I still think he can be effective in certain roles. But when you invest a first-round draft pick, you obviously expect more out of somebody. So the guy that they invested, quote-unquote, the most in is the guy giving them the least return on their investment right now.
And the other thing, too, is it makes you kind of think about what Kareem Hunt can be in this offense. Exactly. A guy that's been in the league for a little bit, 29 years old, kind of does a little bit, kind of maybe like I always considered him like a poor man's Alvin Kamara. I don't know if that's an unfair or fair take on that, but great in the flat, great with his hands, with catching the football, knows how to be a patient runner. And you look at what these defenses are doing to teams in the NFL. You bring Kareem Hunt, we'll know more tomorrow as they start to talk in the media availability. But it kind of brings up an interesting take for me to see like what he can be in this offense, the type of running back that he is, where you see these other running backs in their systems that are doing pretty well that have big time talent at wide receiver.
What is your expectation for Kareem Hunt? Because that's how you, like, to me, it's all about your expectation, right? Like, what is your expectation for the Royals? What is your expectation for the Chiefs? If your expectation for the Chiefs was, you know, 13-4 and to make it into the playoffs, well, you're going to have a successful season. That's going to be good. If your expectation for the Chiefs is to score 50 points a game, go 17-0 and win a Super Bowl, then your expectation, then your name is me, and your expectation may not be met, but you also can understand that sometimes your expectations are a little, you know, out of whack. So what is your expectation for Kareem Hunt? Because I think if you temper your expectations for Kareem Hunt, Dusty, you're going to be pleasantly surprised by what Kareem Hunt does. But if your expectations are 2018 against New England rookie,
that's unfair.
You're smoking a lot of that weed, and you're going to have like expectations that are completely out of whack. But if you go in with Kareem Hunt going, you know what? I expect him to get 10 carries, you know, get you 50 yards and maybe a touchdown, then I think those are expectations that can be manageable. But anything more than that, then your expectations are out of whack, and then you're going to think the guy isn't any good.
No, I mean, I think expectations would be basically a little bit more of what you saw from Samaje Perine in that game.
Right,
I think there's a little bit more expectations of that. But, I mean, I'd like to see him, you know, 10, 15 plays, 6 to 7 of those be in the running game, and then the others be either as a, you know, going out for a pass, either being an option or actually taking the pass in. And, you know, somewhere around those lines, have a little bit more.
I think he provides, I don't know, I'm not going to attribute numbers to, I just think he's going to provide a spark. I just think he's going to come out there. I think guys are going to be really excited to be shoulder to shoulder with him, watching him run over people. I think Mahomes and Travis are going to be like, yeah, that's our guy. I think it's going to provide some sort of energy that the offense needs after losing two of, you know, the four main weapons this season.
Coming up on the other side is the greatest soundbite you've ever heard when we introduced the topic of On the Come on Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome back into Fesco and Dusty. Bob Fesco, Dusty Leggins back, boarding with you today and every day here on 96.5 The Fan. Talking about expectations for Kareem Hunt. Last year, he played in 15 games, started two of those. If you remember, Nick Chubb had one of those brutal, brutal knee injuries.
Uh-huh.
He had 411 rushing yards last year. Now, I want to go to 2021 because I think this is the best sample that we can get from something that we can expect Kareem Hunt to do. And I wonder if you'd be okay with this year for both of you guys. In 2021, he played in 8 games. He had 78 rushing attempts for 386 yards.
I'm good with that. That's about what you should expect from Kareem Hunt. Yeah, I thought you were going to go with like his last good year, you know, where like he hasn't been this good in like 4 years or something like that. No, I think that's legit right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then in 2021, receiving wise, let's see here. He had yards after catch. So he had in 2021, that same year, he had 27 targets. He had 22 receptions for 174 yards. I would take that as well.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't need Kareem Hunt to be all-world running back. I don't need Kareem Hunt to be 700 rushing yards and 500 receiving yards. That's just not going to happen. Those expectations are way too high.
Yeah.
But I do think that he could fit this offensive system where you can have that lockdown. I think he's going to be like a third down running back. Mm-hmm. I think what you could do is you could trot out your guy out there, first and second down, whether that's going to be Carson Steele more often than not or what you're going to do. But then, obviously, you will see the play decrease from Samaje Perine. We still need to see where Kareem Hunt's going to be. We'll know more when the Chiefs speak to the media this week, starting tomorrow. I'm sure you can hear that Andy Reid press conference at 12-ish or so on Cody and Gold. But I am interested to know, like, I would think that he's going to be your third down running back, your pass-catching running back in a passing, you know, sort of situation where it's second and 12, or if it's, you know, you get a penalty on first down, first 15, trot him out there. But I think what you're going to see is a lot of Carson Steele run the ball up the middle, and then you're going to put Kareem Hunt back there and sit him out in the flat or sit him in the little wheel route over the middle, see what he can do with the football in his hands and not have high expectations for him. Because I would take, you know, 400 rushing yards and 200 receiving yards and have a handful of touchdowns. I think that's a great contributor to this offense.
Absolutely. And I think that's the way it has to be from that running back position. I don't think there's ever going to be that one guy that truly dominates the position. Again, you know, the expectation, if you will, with this running back position needs to be a sum of all parts. So you look at the end of the year and you go, okay, what did Kareem Hunt do? What did Carson Steele do? What did Isaiah Pacheco do? What did Samaje Perine do? Mm-hmm. Add it all up together. You're like, oh, that's a really good bit of production from that running back spot. And that's what you really want in a running back position. You don't want one guy that is going to go out there, because what if that one guy gets hurt? What if you're San Francisco and Christian McCaffrey was the one guy that you relied on in your offense and at that running back position, and he's off in Germany now getting his Achilles looked at? You're like, I don't even know if the best piece of our offense is going to come back. The Chiefs have played this really, really smart at that running back position. They're not going to invest into that position in a big way because they know the wear and tear and the shelf life is just not that long. So go out and get a handful of guys that you can rely on, alternate them in, keep them fresh, keep them moving in the same direction, and everything's going to be good. I know we live in a fantasy world where people want to know who to start and whatnot, but Andy Reid doesn't live there, and I'm glad he doesn't live there, because the biggest mistake an NFL GM could make is building his team like a fantasy football owner would do, and that goes back to the running back position. You just can't have that one guy that you want to rely on, because those guys are bound to get hurt, and you need an arsenal of running backs that can contribute. And I think the Chiefs have that right now. They may not be flashy names. It may not be, you know, 7 yards a carry or anything like that, but they've got four guys, I think, right now on this roster that you can rely on to contribute to your offense.
Speaking of fantasy numbers and all that sort of thing, I expect a huge shout out here to Mac from the 816 for the Fantasy Football Podcast on Sunday, starting Amari Cooper over Brian Thomas. Literally won my game.
There you go.
Let's go.
So you can listen to that show every Sunday at 9 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. But now we get to our favorite soundbite of the show as we get to On the Come.
On the Come.
Look here, I'll be honest with you. I'm going to go first here.
Yeah.
Let me straight up with you. Jaden Daniels, baby.
Woo!
Heisman Trophy winner at LSU. How you doing? Preseason pick to win Rookie of the Year over Marvin Harrison Jr. How you doing? Somewhere on the record.
Wow, nice.
Straight up. Somewhere on the record.
Hey,
it's on there.
Nice pick.
Thank you. Plus 700. This kid has been an absolute bona fide stud and a certified G. And if you can't get down with that, you're just SAWFT soft. The guy is literally doing everything you'd like to see in a rookie quarterback. He's been a big surprise in Washington, the biggest since RG3. Now the only thing is you got to protect him.
Don't compare him to RG3. Yeah, he wasn't any good.
What? RG3 was awesome.
Oh, did you see his first stunk. Year? You might want to go check the stat lines.
I can go look at where he's sitting right now, and that's
not
nowhere.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about where he's starting at, because he wasn't protected by the Washington Commandos, or at the time the Redskins. But two games ago, they play the Giants. I get it. You can talk about the Giants all you want. But Mr. Jaden Daniels was 23 of 29 for 226 yards. He also ran the ball 10 times for 44 yards. We all watched the game last night, even though you say you don't watch the NFL, you watch the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
He was 21 of 23, 254 yards passing, 2 passing touchdowns. He ran the ball 12 times for 39 yards and had a rushing touchdown as well.
Pretty good performance last night.
What that means to me is that he's definitely on the come, because he's been in the NFL and he seems to start to figure things out. The other thing is that he's around a great support staff. I think Cliff Kingsbury has really done well with him. Dan Quinn, offensive-minded guy as well, doing good things as well. Defensive-minded guy. I'm sorry, Dan Quinn is. So he doesn't have to worry about getting inside of his ear. And I watched a really good bit on Coward's show yesterday. Like I said, I watch it every day when I get home from the show. And I think the problem that you see with a lot of these young quarterbacks is you don't have an offensive-minded guy speaking to them, right? You look in Chicago.
Yeah.
It's not an offensive guy.
No.
But you look in Green Bay with LaFleur. Look what he's done to Bryce Young, and look what he's done to Malik Willis. Like, those type of guys know how to work with these guys. I thought it was a great take from Colin Cowherd. You have to have offensive minds in this league that has changed to an offensive league. Talk to these young quarterbacks who can be offensive quarterbacks. But Jaden Daniels had a ton of targets in LSU. The same thing with Joe Burrow. He had Chase and he had Jefferson and he had, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Randy Moss's son out there. And then he got to the league and he got an offensive coach in Zach Taylor. And Joe Burrow's been good. But you look at what Jaden Daniels has done with the Washington Commanders, and he's been absolutely brought to advertise, and I think he is the favorite right now to win the Rookie of the Year.
Well, and I think you don't necessarily have to have an offensive-minded head coach, but you have to have a good, strong offensive coordinator. And I think Cliff Kingsbury is that. I mean, and he's very relatable, Dusty, to the younger generation of players. And he's very relatable because, I don't know, he was Patrick Mahomes' college coach, right? And I've told the story that, like, when they drafted Patrick Mahomes, the first phone call, Andy Reid, wasn't to Patrick Mahomes. It was to Cliff Kingsbury to find out what makes this kid successful. Why does this kid work? And I'd like to think Cliff Kingsbury learned from that. And I would hope his first call after drafting Jaden Daniels was down to LSU. Maybe not Brian Kelly, because he's kind of a fake and a fraud.
Family.
Right. But whoever, you know, potentially worked with him on offense there to find out what this kid does well, what this kid doesn't do well, and you put him in that position to be successful. And it looks like that's what Washington is doing. That's where a good coach differentiates differentiates between an ass is that you go out there and you know how to put your players in the best possible position. You don't try to do what's best for you as the coach. You do what's best for the player, which would in turn then equal good results for you, and then everybody's happy down there.
Right.
My on-the-come guy is Malik Nabers this week, and you mentioned him, and that's who I'm going with for my on-the-come this week, because he had that coming-out party on Sunday, right? Everybody saw that. Everybody saw his performance, like, wow. And now he's got a Thursday night game on national streaming against America's alleged team, the Dallas Cowboys. Everybody's going to be paying attention to that game. The Malik Nabers hype over the next couple of days is going to be loud. It's going to be large. It's going to be all in our faces. And I hope he goes out there and lives up to what he did against the Cleveland Commodes on Sunday and has that same type of performance against the Dallas Browns on Thursday on national streaming. So I think ultimately Malik Nabers is my guy on the come. I will say this, though, for both of our picks, this is the NFL in a nutshell. We are ready to crown guys as the best. And in baseball, somebody goes out there and plays well at the beginning, like, well, give them 600 at bats, give them a full season. Like, the difference between the two sports is just unbelievable to me. Week one, we're ready to determine this team sucks and this team is good and this player is good and this player is bad. In baseball, we're like, come see me in 6 years and we'll decide whether or not that player is good. In the NFL, we say on week one, this team is good, and week two, this team sucks. Week three, now this team's good again. Now week four, this team sucks. It's amazing in the NFL how that jump to conclusions, Matt, is there, and we're just jumping all over the place with players and teams. And in baseball, we're like, yeah, give it 600 a patch. Call me in June, and we'll see where this team is.
Yeah, but you watch 3 weeks of Malik Nabers, one good week of Jaden Daniels. You're like, these are the guys.
These are the guys.
And
yeah,
I agree. I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. Leak and Jaden.
Leak. Yeah, right. I mean, my old man texts me, Leak.
Baby.
Both of those players are
on the come.
Just wanted to use the sounder again. Okay, you two rookie players. I'm going with the rookie head coach, Dave Canales. I mean, this guy was mentioned on Tough Tuesdays, I think, by both of you in these last few weeks. He's been a head coach for less time than you guys have maybe had milk in your fridge.
It's true. I just threw out some milk the other day. It's pretty bad.
Yeah. Almond milk lasts really long.
They gave him Andy Dalton for 1 week, and he had him throw for 300 yards, three touchdowns. They scored over 30 points. With old Adam Thielen, Chuba
Hubbard. Who's now hurt. Right? Thielen's banged up. He may not play this week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's going to be Deontay and Chuba and some guy named Tommy Trimble. So this guy's on the freaking come for me. I think Dave Canales, offensive-minded head coach, something that we were just talking about, and wasn't working with Bryce Young. Give him a 35-year-old Andy Dalton who hasn't played in 12 months. Right. It's fine.
Yeah, but I think what's interesting about that move is that guy, Root Canales, saw what went on down there with Frank Reich down in Carolina, right? And saw that guy didn't last a season. And then you go through two games and you got your nutbag owner throwing drinks in faces of people and screaming and yelling like a loon. And you're like, I'm playing Andy Dalton because this guy's probably going to fire me in like 6 weeks if this thing doesn't get turned around. So if I'm going down with a competent veteran quarterback, not some sack that another regime drafted that sucks beyond belief. So it's a smart move by Root Canales to go out there and start Andy Dalton because he's trying to preserve his job. And Andy Dalton gives you a better chance to win than Bryce Young did.
And he has said that there is a chance that Bryce comes back later on in the season.
Yeah, that's trade value trying to be boosted. They're not bringing Bryce Young back. They're trying to boost his trade value to the Miami Dolphins as we get closer to week 8 when the trade deadline comes around.
Yeah, they should trade him.
By the way, the favorite for offensive rookie of the year right now is Jaden Daniels at plus 150.
Malik after him, I assume?
He is at plus 250.
See how a week makes a difference?
Marvin Harrison Jr. is third at plus 350. Caleb Williams is fourth at plus 650. Yeah. Caleb Williams is your favorite going into the season, followed by Marvin Harrison Jr., followed by Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, crazy.
And by the way, if you want another stat, if you took it early, right? I think you did. Andy Reid plus 5,000 when Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
Well, now he's plus 3,500.
He's moving up. All right.
He's moving up.
There you go. Andy Reid should be Coach of the Year, but they're going to give it to that jackass in Cleveland who lost to the Giants. Well, I mean, Stefanski, they started slow and they won 10 games and they're 10-7.
Right now, the leaders in the clubhouse for Coach of the Year, number one is KOC. Kevin O'Connell.
Nice.
He's really good. With Darnold, what he's done with that offense, 100%. And continue to keep going. Kevin O'Connell is your favorite. Mike McDonald is number two.
Good. Yeah, I got Andy Reid at plus 5,000.
That's right. Yeah, so you're looking good.
Yeah.
See if you can cash.
No, they won't let me yet. Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh is third at plus 900. Mike Tomlin at fourth at plus 1,000.
He should be higher than that because nobody had expectations for Pittsburgh, right? And they're sitting at 3-0. But Tomlin's in the same boat as Andy Reid. Neither of them will ever get Coach of the Year, even though they're the two best in the NFL. If Root Canales goes 7-10, they'll get Coach of the Year down there in Carolina.
He should if you go 7-10.
But that's that you're not coach of the year. You're 7 games below .500 or 3 games below .500. Doesn't make you coach of the year. Staying on top and dominating this league for as long as Andy Reid had, I don't know what more the guy needs to do to get a coach of the year award, right? And he'll tell you he'd rather have a cheeseburger and a Lombardi than coach of the year. But sometimes you got to respect the guy who just goes out there and kicks everybody else's ass on a consistent basis.
I'm trying to see who won Rookie of the Year in the NFL for 2012, but Robert Griffin III's numbers as a first-year starter in Washington started in 15 games, played in 15 games. He was 258 to 393, 65.6 completion percentage, threw a perfect 3,200 yards in the air, 20 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. If Jaden Daniels can do that, which he's on pace to do.
He didn't even go through his running stats. His rushing, I'm sure he had touchdowns and running. He was a great, and he was rookie of the year.
He was rookie of the year.
RG3 was? I thought he was. I was trying to make sure.
I didn't even look that up. That's just because I'm pretty positive. I'm not even looking that up.
So, look, I mean, if you can be that, you're the best quarterback that they've had since then. Don't screw it up, Washington. That's all I have to say.
They will. Well, actually, that's not fair to say. Dan Snyder's no longer part of that operation. You got to give him a hot minute to see what they're going to do, right?
Root Canales might be one of your best.
That's really good, man.
That's pretty
great work.
Solid. That's up there. Thank with you. Crying Van Noy.
Karen Van Noy.
Karen Van Noy.
Yeah.
You're on a roll.
How did Karen play this past weekend? Mm-hmm. We talked about that,
well.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Complained about the eye doctor getting too slow moving to the scene.
Yeah, good thing the eye doctor didn't go there. That way you can kind of keep your focus on the field like you've done against Dallas in this week's blowout edition. I guess it wasn't a blowout. They kind of came back and handled business a little bit better.
Baltimore's like the worst team at closing out games in NFL history. Aren't they? There's some like wild stat that they just don't know how to win.
I forgot what that was last year, but they cannot close.
No,
they
cannot close. Man.
Karen Van Noy had two tackles.
Oh, good. But he was featured a lot in that broadcast.
And both of those tackles were sacks.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Good for Karen.
Two sacks.
Yeah. I guess his eye's okay.
Yeah. At least for now.
Yeah.
You've got a good perspective from Andy Reid on the Travis Kelce thing.
Yeah. He was talking about it yesterday in his press conference, as they like to say, right? Where he was gathered with the media and regaling tales of yesteryear. And obviously the question of Travis Kelce comes up. And this is what Andy Reid said about Travis Kelce. He says, well, I mentioned to you that Rashid's game goes is kind of how Kelce game goes, Reid said. So what defenses are doing is they're working hard, taking Kelce out of the picture. And Kelsey's going, hey, listen, if you're going to do that, then Rashid's going to get a lot of catches. He knows that, but somewhere that levels off. And that's where I'm at with this one right now. Somewhere that levels off. When will it level off when we see teams try to take out Rashee Rice as opposed to Travis Kelce? And Dana Hughes was on earlier and kind of talked about that. You can grab a podcast on our website or wherever you get your podcasts. And Dana talked a little bit about that and said, look, I don't know that it's ever going to be the case because the days of taking out a wide receiver are kind of done with the movements and the routes that they're running these days. It's hard to take out those wide receivers. And so if they're still not able to take out Rashee Rice, and that means Travis Kelce's production declines, but this team is still winning football games, really, that's all that matters. I still think Kelce's the number one option, and you don't want him to beat you, and teams are going to still continue to focus on Travis Kelce. But I am waiting for that one day where they say, you know what, Travis has lost a step. Let's see what we can do against Rashee Rice. And then Travis has that big day. And then Travis goes out there and decides to destroy the competition, because that day is coming, and it may happen this week in LA, right? He seems to play well out there. You can't double both of these guys. You got to pick your poison. And right now that poison just happens to be Travis Kelce. And the more emphasis they put on taking him out of the game, the less production he's going to have, but the more production Rashee Rice is going to have, and it's going to lead to wins for this football team.
Yeah. It's almost like they're playing into the load management. You know, you're going to take away the number one option right now in the offense, which is Rashee Rice, then we're going to make you get burnt with either Travis Kelce or Juju Smith-Schuster.
Right.
Right? Juju was forgotten all about on that crossing pattern against Atlanta when he scored.
Yeah, he was.
Almost untouched if he wasn't untouched. Mm-hmm. But it just was like, oh, we don't expect that from him. That's going to happen sooner than later with Travis Kelce. Like, it's going to get to the point where the bait is going to finally get bitten by Andy Reid in this offense, and everybody's going to have that day where it's like, okay, we now agree with the talking heads on 96.5 The Fan that he's not washed, but he's just not going to be used as much because you don't have to,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like your, what is it? Draw 4 card in Uno. Yeah, it's a bad thing to look at when it's in your hand, like when it's not being played. You're like, damn, this is 10 points if I get caught with these cards in my hand. But when you played at the right moment, everyone goes, ah, son of a buck, mm-hmm. I missed it. There's still one out there. that can be Travis Kelce. He can be your draw four of an Uno card where it's like, hey, you know what? I've got three cards left. You don't know what they are. One of them that I'm looking at right now is not looking very pretty, but that's okay because this isn't going to be in my hand all the time. I'm going to give this off to somebody else and they're going to have their problems with their roster. But right now I know that I don't necessarily need Travis Kelce. Like, I don't know what's the bigger story with Travis Kelce. The fact that he doesn't look the same or the fact that this team is 3-0 without him.
Without him, yeah. And maybe they are 3-0 though because teams are still concentrating. Like, those are the questions we never know. Like the chicken or the egg type of thing, right? Are they doubling and taking Travis out?
Right.
Or has Travis lost the step and they don't have to worry? Like, there's so many ways to approach it. And as long as they continue to win games, it really shouldn't matter. We also conveniently, as sports fans, forget that other teams are paid professionals as well.
Yeah.
And they come up with these game plans and they work all week and they try to, you know, scheme to take certain players out. They'll go into their meeting tomorrow, and the first thing the defensive coordinator, whoever the hell that may be for San Diego, right, will say the number one option we have to stop is 87. We're not going to let Travis Kelce beat us. And then it goes from there. And then that's where Rashee Rice gets his numbers, where Xavier Worthy gets his numbers. Maybe the running game gets open. But I do believe until he retires, Travis Kelce is going to be that number one guy that other teams are scheming against. And as we've mentioned numerous times over the last 2 days, the defenses in this league are faster. They're more athletic than they've ever been. There's actually guys that can now match up with Travis Kelce, where in years past, there was nobody on planet Earth on defense that could match up with him.
And looking at what the matchup is going to be, obviously more will come out the week from the Chargers injury report. They're going to be without both of their tackles.
Yeah.
They could possibly be without their quarterback, and they're going to be without Derwin James, who's also been suspended.
Right. Now, he can appeal that suspension. I don't know how long that's going to take or whatever the case may
be. He better get on it now.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So if Derwin James is going to appeal, you appeal today. The appeals process goes through. Maybe you're suspended for a half or however you reduce a one-game suspension. But yeah. I don't want him playing in this game, not because he's a good football player, because he's a dirty football player. He's being suspended for trying to intentionally injure the tight end of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't need that guy out on the football field against Travis Kelce.
Pat Fairmuth. That guy was supposed to help me out in fantasy football for a couple of years. Never did.
Never did. But still.
He's like the white Njoku.
This dude's going out there trying to injure this guy?
Well, he's always been that guy. Remember when he scumbag slammed Travis Kelce to the ground?
Right.
That guy plays to hurt people.
Right. And he gets Walter Payton Manager of the Year or Player of the Year nominations
twice.
And stuff? Twice. Like, right. I don't want that guy on the football field. I don't think the game is good with Derwin James part of it if he's trying to go out there and injure. Like, when was the last time you saw a guy suspended in the NFL for being, like, somebody who's going out there trying to hurt people on purpose? You don't see that a lot in this league because guys are a fraternity. It's a brotherhood. They're all in this at the end of the day together. And this guy's going out there and intentionally trying to hurt people. I don't need him anywhere part of this game on Sunday.
Yeah. From the 816 conspiracy theory.
All right.
The Chiefs have realized they don't need Travis Kelce to win regular season games. Spend the entire season making the rest of the league think that he's washed so teams don't plan against him much for this postseason, and then that's when he goes off.
No, that's not a conspiracy theory. That's the truth.
Okay. Speaking of the truth, the Chiefs and the Royals, well, here's the truth. 1,300 views on our visual page.
Go look at that. Subscribe and watch us on the TV.
There you go. You can see us every day. Put us on your TV while you're ironing your pants, making your coffee, making a little whoopee with your lady, or just don't get caught.
Like don't get caught. Yeah.
If you forgot that story yesterday, go back and listen to the podcast. Fesco got caught making whoopee with his wife by his kids. Be careful on Taco Tuesday, Bob. Coming up on the other side, Bobby Witt Jr., Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes. Bobby Witt Jr. Listen to Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for Royals baseball. 96.5 The Fan.
All right, mount up. We've only got about another hour and 15 minutes left. This show flies by. It's already almost over for Tuesday. Then we're in a hump day. Then here we go.
Here comes the weekend, baby.
That's right. Love it. 325 start this week, baby. Or is it 305? I thought it was 325.
I don't think the Chiefs ever get that 305 start. They're usually too good for that. Right. Give it another 20 minutes, push them back into prime time. Let's go.
Yeah. You going to have fish tacos tonight?
Probably not tonight, no. Are you?
Not fish tacos.
No.
Probably some sort of chicken dish.
I made some ground turkey tacos yesterday. There's not enough salt in the world for ground turkey.
That's fair.
made this whole thing look good. My daughter takes a bite. She goes, this doesn't taste like anything. I'm like, oh boy, COVID. So then I took a bite. I'm like, no, clearly there's no taste to this. Like the whole packet of taco seasoning mix had to go in, some salt, like ground turkey brings nothing to the party.
Bobby Witt Jr. versus Patrick Mahomes. This is your fruit of the nectar topic that you wanted to get into today, because again, the Royals go to Washington tonight, 5:45 first pitch. Vern's on deck show at 4:45. Make sure you're tuning into that. Need Bobby Witt Jr. to have one of those God mode type of moments. That 2000 and what was that, 18 Mahomes, where it was, hey, our defense sucks.
Yeah.
Well, our lineup can't produce runs, but if you can do something out of the ordinary and be this superstar MVP caliber player, our team has at least a chance. And I think that's kind of where we're at when you talk about Mahomes and Bobby Witt Jr. and where you can shine in these moments.
There's a big difference though, Dusty. Yep. In the NFL, you can do that.
Yeah.
In baseball, if the other team doesn't give you the opportunity, you can't do that. And so for me to sit here and say Bobby Witt has to go out there and be the catalyst, like, yes, right, he does. However, comma, I don't expect the Nationals or the Braves to allow Bobby Witt to be that catalyst, because they realize right now there's nobody else in this lineup that has stepped up and is producing. Salvi is clearly pressing because he knows he's the only option in that lineup right now. It would be like if Mahomes only had Travis Kelce to throw the football to. They took Travis Kelce out and there was nobody else. That's kind of where we are right now, you know, with the Royals. And I saw this on CBS Sports, and I'll just read you the quote. Witt has only been, quote, good or even very good instead of MVP caliber since August 28th. And that has had an impact. From June 30th to August 27th, Witt hit .416, 17 doubles, 3 triples, 15 homers, 41 RBIs, and 50 runs in 48 games. That's insane, right? That's MVP-type numbers. In the 23 games since, basically since Vinny's gone down, he's hit .261, 6 doubles, 5 homers, 14 RBIs, and just 11 runs scored. Mm. To make matters worse, it's not just Bobby Witt. Urseg, since that date, has a 7.45 ERA, a 1.55 whip. He's blown 2 saves and taken 3 losses. So the guy that was supposed to be that superstar that we could rely on out of the bullpen has not been good in the last 23 games. It seems like what we're experiencing right now with the Royals, which is why this sucks, is everybody hit their ceiling, and now it's kind of coming back down to earth. And I think the big reason Bobby Witt has kind of come back down to earth is because other teams now, for the last 23 days, are like, okay, Vinny's not in the lineup. Salvi's the only other guy that's a legitimate player out here for us right now. We're not going to allow Bobby Witt to get on base, and everybody else is going to have to beat us, and nobody has raised that level of play. And so Bobby Witt is basically being asked to carry the entire team. And in baseball, that's just impossible to do. A quarterback can do that in the NFL. You have the ball. You have control. You are making the decisions. Mm. Yes, they're being impacted by the other team. But in baseball, man, if they want to play keep away from you, they're going to play keep away from you. And they're playing keep away from Bobby Witt right now.
I think that's why it's key that we need to see Salvador Perez kind of step up in that role as the captain. Because if you want to start pitching around Bobby Witt Jr., they're going to do that until they get burned by it. Like you said, nobody's knocking him in behind him. That's why I've kind of advocated that in these last 6 games, why not let him lead off just so, one, he can get as many at-bats as possible.
There's second, then?
I mean,
would you put Salvi at second?
No, because the speed's not there. I would probably put somebody, like, that's where I'd probably put Pham.
Okay.
And the reason I would switch those two is because Tommy Pham is definitely pressing right now. He was doing very well when he got here, that leadoff position. But you move him into that second spot, and you put Sal and Bobby sandwiched between him instead of him, Bobby, Sal, and you put him between a Bobby Witt Jr. and a Salvador Perez sandwich, then it's like, okay, well, we're not going to pitch to Bobby Witt Jr. because we know we can get Tommy Pham out, but we also can't pitch, you know, around him because we don't want Salvador Perez to potentially come up with 2 men on. Salvador Perez, it's a 3-run homer. If he can hit a 3-run homer in the first inning, that gives Cole Reagans basically the door to just go ahead and shut up.
At that point,
then you can send the text.
Right.
And if you know, you know. And I think that's what I would do these last six games, just to maybe kind of tinker with something. Let Bobby lead off. Let Tommy Pham hit second. Let Salvador Perez hit third. And then at fourth and fifth, that's where you've got to kind of get creative, because if Sal doesn't live up to that expectation of being a knock-in hitter where he can get players in on, you know, if Bobby's on second, he ought to score every time.
Absolutely.
I mean, every time. With right. nobody out and Bobby Wood Jr. on second, there should not, I would, 80% of the time he should score from second. And if that's the case, whether you go up 3-0 or 1-0, you've then given your team a little bit of an offensive like awakening to where you're like, okay, we got runs in, we got our leadoff guy in, we have a one run lead. Let's move forward into this. And then if you do have that random inning where the bottom of the lineup comes up and Isbell gets on and Renfroe gets on and you have two guys on with one out and Bobby Witt Jr. comes back up in that leadoff spot, you can't walk him.
Right.
And then he makes you get hurt. And then what you've done is you've kind of played that Patrick Mahomes effect where, yeah, he's not the quarterback who touches the base or the football every single play, but now you're going around the lineup because you know where he's at ahead of time, whereas you're looking at the clock and saying, if we punt here to Patrick Mahomes, he's got 3.5 minutes to go down there and score a touchdown. That's way too much time. What does your team start to do? It starts to forget and press in the moment, and then you start making mistakes to these hitters that need these mistakes to capitalize on that. So if I could do anything with this lineup right now, if anything I could possibly do, I'd put Bobby Witt Jr. at the leadoff position. A different way than what they did with the Mariners back in the 90s with Ken Griffey Jr. when he was chasing Maris. They would put him at the leadoff spot to give him more
bats. Yeah.
But with Bobby Witt Jr., you kind of shake things up. Who's hit second and played every game the entire year, only one game at DH, the rest at shortstop. You put him in that leadoff perspective and that leadoff position, it gives the pitcher another sort of, well, if I walk him, I'm going to have to pitch around him. I'm going to throw four pitches in the first at bat. Or he's going to foul one off. I'm already five pitches in the first at bat.
Yeah.
Or do you just
intentionally walk right away and just put him on?
Baseball, that's a weak sign. That means you're just going, okay.
But Bobby's also gotten himself out a little bit lately, too, right? Like I think he's pressing as much as Salvador Perez is, because they know they're the only two guys in this lineup right now that are really bringing anything to the party, right? You have a party and Salvador Perez is bringing the beer and Bobby Witt's bringing all the food, and then there's seven other guys that are just showing up being leeches off the party and not contributing to anything. And that's kind of where this lineup is right now. There's seven other guys in this lineup that just aren't producing right now. And so Bobby, I think if I were Q, I would tell him, say, look, man, you got to stop pressing, get up to the plate and don't swing at anything unless it's a good pitch, because they're not going to give you something good to hit. So don't get yourself out. Go up there and just wait for that pitch. Now, the flip side is people will say, you don't want to take the bat out of his hand. You don't want him to not be aggressive. No, we're in a situation now where we're going to make the pitchers come to Bobby Witt Jr. He's not going to go to them. And I think he's been going to them for the last couple of games. Instead of waiting for his pitch, you see him chasing pitches. He's hitting things off the end of the bat. He's popping up. He's not having good at bats. Like, the pressure is really on. Hopefully the off day yesterday and the flight and all of that kind of stuff, they're able to relax a little bit and go into these three games against the Nationals and take care of business. But on the flip side, the Nationals are a young team. They're like the Royals have been in September over the years past. Young guys playing for potential jobs, and they're playing some good baseball right now. So nothing is a given. The Royals just have to find a way to score two or three runs. If they can do that, I think they'll be in really good shape tonight.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like we said, these next six games, I think the Royals need to win four.
Yeah.
This is one of those part of those seasons where the cliches of baseball come out. You can only control what you control. You have to win your games and not worry about anybody else. Let us guys here that do this.
Right.
Let us worry about what Detroit's doing, what Minnesota's doing, what Seattle's doing, right? Tampa Bay Rays, they go play at Detroit tonight. Scoobles on the mound. That's probably a win. Actually, that game's at 12-10. So we'll know right away if Detroit's, it's
day 12, game today, huh?
12-10. Yep, that's for sure. And then, Minnesota gets a nice, easy one. They get a home game against the Marlins. But it is what it is. You can't control what they do. Maybe they both lose today and you win, and all of a sudden you come into Wednesday's show and we're both a little bit more relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
You win Wednesday. That's two in a row. One of the other teams loses. All of a sudden the magic number is four with five to go, and you got a little bit more comfortability. But, you can only control what you control.
Right.
I still think they should mix up the lineup by putting Bobby Witt Jr. at the leadoff spot. That's my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think that's one of those moves that kind of makes everybody else in the lineup be thought about, even though nobody in baseball is thinking about anybody in this lineup other than Bobby Witt Jr., and it's well-merited.
It is. It absolutely is. Nobody else has done enough to have anybody else concerned about them. It's going to be real interesting to see the lineup. I'm already nervous, man. Mm-hmm. Like, it's 8:56 in the morning. We don't play till 5:45 tonight, And I can already feel the anxiety and the nerves wondering what this team is going to do. You say 4-2 to get in. I kind of think you're right about that, Like, I was talking to one of our listeners on Twitter yesterday, and we were kind of going back and forth, like, what do you think has to happen and all this kind of stuff. Everybody feels like 4-2, 3-3 may not get it done. You got to find a way to win four of your final six. They can do it, but it's going to take everybody having an impact on this game.
Or go with the Cleveland Indians move in the World Series. Just go win the whole effing thing.
That's right.
Baseball coverage on 610 Sports Radio is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Don't forget, we will be giving away an opportunity for you to win a $500 gift card to Hy-Vee. We will play some audio, get into that for you as well. 5:30. You're going to want to listen at 9:30, not 5:30. 9:30. We'll give you that opportunity. But coming up next, we do start, bench, cut here on Fesco and Dusty. I'm Dusty Likens, Bob Fesco, Mac Moore. You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for K-State athletics. 96.5 The Fan.